Hey, I'm Tim.
And I'm Drew.
And this is the Hearts and Hands Podcast.
In Season 2, Episode 23, we talked to Jason Jasperson and Anna Biedenbender about artists in isolation.
Welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Tim Babbler, joined as always by my co-host, Drew Sonnenberg. And Drew, it's always fun when we get to have multiple guests on the show, and this was another one of those. We talked to a lot of people, just one person, whether it's one artist or creative person or church administrator, whatever it is, pastor. But sometimes we talk to two people in two completely different locations. Sometimes they know each other, usually they do, but every once in a while we get that roundtable aspect too, which is fun. I don't know. I enjoyed this conversation this week.
Yeah, it was great. We got to talk to Jason Jasperson, who we've had on this show many times, and his former student, Anna Biedenbender, who we've also had on the show a couple times. And it was really awesome because very early on in the conversation, as you'll hear, we kind of all, you know, realized that we had gone through some of the same things kind of mentally and emotionally at the beginning of quarantine and the pandemic. So it was a little cathartic to know that we weren't alone, you know. But it made me think about how if it was so good for me to hear that and to know that there are people who felt the same way that I did, it's important for us to be doing that for others as well. So I'm sure you've heard this before, but check in on your friends. Some of them may still be going through kind of a spiral or a tailspin that this whole situation kind of started. So check in on them. Make sure they're okay. Be praying for them.
And we know there are some people for which this isn't just a seasonal thing, but just know that we're praying for you. Reach out if you need help. There's lots of people that are trained professionally to do that. And we just wanted to start this conversation as well on the importance of, you know, emotional mental health when it comes to being a creative person in a time of isolation.
So let's go ahead and get to our conversation with Jason and Anna.
Today, we're excited to bring you a special edition of the podcast with two guests, two of our former guests, Anna Biedenbender and Jason Jasperson. Welcome.
Hi, guys.
Anna, could you give a reintroduction to yourself for those who may have missed your prior episodes?
Oh, sure. Yeah, Anna Biedenbender. I'm an artist based in the Twin Cities, though currently living in Glenwood, Minnesota. Yeah, that's me. That's me right now.
There you go. And Jason?
I'm an artist and educator. I work out of my studio in New Ulm, Minnesota, and teach painting and sculpture classes at Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, Minnesota.
Awesome. Well, we're really glad to have you guys back on. Thanks for agreeing to be guests again. And we want to kind of focus in today on kind of like the emotional and mental health of people in general, but specifically creative people. A lot of things changed. A lot of people had to change their mode of operation or whatever it is. Maybe you're going through professional changes and things right now. But how would you say that this pandemic, whether it's because of quarantine or because of a fear of catching the virus or whatever it is, has affected you personally?
Well, I guess I can go, you know, early on as things were starting to shut down and spring break kind of got extended, I had kind of an unexplainable lethargy, I guess. I had a hard time getting going in the morning, and in retrospect, I really feel like there was just a lot of mental work going on, a lot of processing, because, you know, there's certain foundations of the way you think the world's going to go, and you just kind of rely on that stuff. And now I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what to be working towards. Some projects disappeared, fell through. So personally, I feel like I'm pulled out of it now, but I had, I'd say a dark month where I would venture to say that there was depression going on.
Yep. Same for me. For sure. I have, like many people, personally, I've got an immunocompromised system. So I had to leave my apartment in the cities. I live with a wonderful roommate who is a nurse. And so that wasn't gonna, yeah, that wasn't gonna fly. So I came to live with my family in Glenwood. And so I kind of felt like everything was uprooted. I didn't mention this in my introduction, but I also am director of operations at Mount Olive in St. Paul. They were great, and I've been able to work remotely for church, as many of us have. But along with not having, you know, my regular place to live, I also then didn't have my studio space in the cities. So I felt, I personally felt, yeah, absolutely depression and like a paralysis of, you know, just trying to take everything in and, you know, what does this mean for my life and for my studio practice and for just what does the future look like for artists, I think, who think so deeply about things without even really, you know, consciously knowing it. This was a lot for, I think, creatives to take in. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, some of the things you were saying, like, really resonated with me, too. One of the things I found was, if you're familiar with, like, StrengthsFinder, my number one strength is deliberative, which means...
Me too.
Nice. So, so, like... What one way of describing deliberative, if you haven't taken the test, is like there are some people that are ready, fire, aim sort of people, and those people drive me nuts. I can't, like, I just don't understand them. I'm rather a ready, aim, aim, aim. Are we sure this is what we're aiming at? Okay, now we can fire.
And, that is such a good way to describe it.
And this whole pandemic's just kind of, whoa, like, I don't know what I'm aiming at next week. I don't know what I'm aiming at next month. I don't know what I'm aiming at 6 months from now. And like you were saying, Jason, like, that really made getting out of bed in the morning difficult for a good while there. It was tough.
And even the ready aim fire people didn't know what to aim at. Really.
Yeah.
And that doesn't help either. You know?
Yeah.
That's such a good way to describe it.
So Jason, what did you find? You said you had kind of a dark month there. Was there anything in particular that helped you kind of work your way out of that?
Well, I was aware of it. You know, it was a strange thing. Like, I knew that things are not normal. And I didn't know what to do about it. And with time, I could kind of feel myself, I could feel things getting a little brighter, and I had a little more energy day by day. But, you know, the thing that really sort of turned the page for me, I had an intern in my studio for 30 days. And that forced me to be at a certain place at a certain time. And it forced me to be ready with something to say and kind of a, you know, a loose program of tasks for him. So suddenly, you know, there were deadlines again. And there were days of the week again. And a certain time on the clock meant something. So after that, you know, now... Really, I feel so much better than before that.
You said you had that intern for 30 days. I assume that's done now?
Yes.
So what helped you maintain that new positive outlook after those 30 days were over?
Well, you know, everybody talks about the new normal. That's kind of a catchphrase now. I guess I had a month of... being on a schedule and, you know, kind of being social, and maybe it just sort of stuck.
Sure.
I kind of think you know, the school year is going to start up again. Bethany and I know a lot of other colleges, a lot of other schools are dedicated to being in person. And, you know, I think that's going to look surreal. It's going to be strange because everybody will be wearing masks and trying to keep the distance, and there'll be weird stuff. But it will present a routine. It will present faces, people, surprises. So, you know, I'm looking forward to others having that opportunity, too, to just have that routine in place.
It's amazing how much that just a little, you know, one scheduled meeting makes all the difference, and how we're kind of created to be that way. We couldn't help but laugh over here. It was a huge blessing to have family to live with during this time. And I have definitely been thinking of all those who've been, you know, alone in apartments in the city and stuff. And I just cannot imagine how difficult that's been. But we were laughing at how it felt like very Laura Ingalls. You know, if you had to go get your groceries, you know, after those first 3 weeks or whatever, it was like, okay, I'm going to dress up and go into town. Yeah. And it's going to be this huge deal. And you like look forward to it for days, even though you know it's going to be weird. But just the tiniest things became big, big events. And I think another thing that kind of snapped me out of some of that darkness was, in all honesty, more darkness that was for other people, you know, when George Floyd was killed. I think that snapped all of us out of maybe a bit of a
self-absorption.
Yeah, I'm hesitating because depression in and of itself is not selfish. That's a thing that people struggle with, and that there's nothing people can do about that. But it doesn't mean that there isn't sin and brokenness in there too. And so it's very easy for that to become very internalized and self-absorbed, even the tiniest bit. And so some of these things that have been happening in our world have forced us to look outside of ourselves. I mean, as a creative person, not only taking this time now to think more consciously about others and to learn, do a lot of learning. But I know for me, this time is starting to form some new ideas for work that honestly has probably been in the back of my mind since like college. And it just hasn't been fully formed yet because I didn't have enough of the experiences yet to be able to create that. So I don't know, it's been a long term of incubation and learning and praying. But that is something I'm excited about, just the work that might come out of this. I don't know, have you guys had any new projects that are like, okay, now's the time? They feel like they can be a thing?
Well, I don't know that I have anything directly parallel to what you're saying, but I do think about it differently. What really interests me about what you just said is that you've had things in the back of your head for a while, and I think there's a misconception that artists know what's going to come out of them. Sometimes you just don't. And really, art is a product of its time. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, we just kind of become a conduit, and things just can't help but emerge.
For sure. That deliberative strength is like the one that I can push to the very end when I'm painting. It's the one thing I've trained myself to not have to know the end result, because it's just not possible. Like you said, you have no idea what's going to come out of it, as much as you might plan and aim and aim and aim, as you said, Drew.
Yeah. It's interesting that the way you guys are both talking about this, because I think to some people, it sounds like you're saying contradictory things here. On the one hand, you're saying that, you know, as an artist, you just, it's completely wide open. You don't know what's going to happen. You just, like, there are no limits and all that. But on the other hand, we started by talking about how as soon as we didn't have a schedule, like, we couldn't get work done, that we needed the boundaries and the constrictions. Otherwise, nothing happened. Can you?
Absolutely.
How do you reconcile those two ideas?
Jason, you probably have more experience.
Yeah.
Even talking to me about that as a student.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Well, right. First of all, I'm proud to hear Anna say that she keeps the question open until the end. Given a time machine, I think she'd be surprised to hear herself say that.
Absolutely. I'm the student who got upset with Mr. Jasperson because he didn't give me enough prompts.
Yeah,
he
right.
Left too wide open, and I was so upset by that.
Right. And I knew what I was doing, too. I mean, I saw a prescription that you needed.
Uh-huh.
So in the past few years, I've been thinking about the hierarchy of what it takes for an artwork to exist. What a cool sentence. So what I mean is you can't have a painting without the field of painting. You know, or like a movie exists within the film industry or the cinema art form. Sure. I mean, the industry, the art form. So the shortcut, the way to name those things, I call them a system of expression. So you get an expression that comes out of a system of expression.
Sure.
Clear so far?
Yep.
Well, a system of expression needs something to stand on, and that's kind of a way of thought. So a person believes or thinks a certain way. There's a root philosophy. So, you know, these kind of things sort of back to their paradigms, their foundations underneath the thing you see. And I think what was going on is the paradigms were shaking and are continuing to be questioned and shaken. And so as a creative, you know, you want to get to that expression. You want to get something out of you. But when everything's kind of tumbly and changing, you got to find your footing. You got to figure out, well, okay, what do I really believe about a certain topic? And then what kind of system of expression do I use? And then the individual artwork, the individual expression. So I think we were in a significant paradigm shift. Some of those foundational things are changing, and what's so hard is that you don't know which way is up yet. You don't know what the future looks like because you're still kind of, there's still stuff spinning in the air. It's kind of flying around and you can't see through it. It feels like the dust is starting to settle, but maybe that's just because I'm not watching the news enough.
It makes me think of the classic falling dream. Like usually you wake up before you hit the ground. Mm. And you're continually falling because you don't have a ground to hit yet.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Floating.
Right. At the same time, what would you say, like, if someone, I don't know, I guess maybe if I said this, would you agree or disagree that we, as humans, are going to have to relearn fundamentals That seems like a very broad question, but we as humans are going to have to relearn some fundamental things about humanity and about being and about doing because of the shift.
You know, really, I think that's going to be a very contentious topic. I think that is the contentious topic. The question, do we need to change, really gets under people's skin, you know. I work pretty hard to stay out of ideological camps. I see some scary things coming from people who blindly scream allegiance. And I think really underneath a lot of what we see is this question about change. Is change good, or is change a threat? So that's like that system of expression thing. You know, this for me, a way of thought, a philosophy, is way deep down in me to be really leery of extremism.
I always think I don't know. At this point in my life, I'm convinced that things either come out of love or they come out of fear. And I think that idea of change is rooted in fear. It's really hard. It's really hard. I hate change. I'm paralyzed by change. Hence the first, month or so of this whole COVID thing. And that's a hard thing to confront in yourself.
Yeah, but when you make an artwork, that's constant change, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Maybe you're steering it, though.
Right, yeah, you're in control, for sure. And I think that's why I don't paint sometimes. I just can't. Because even that level of not being in control is scary. Yeah.
You know, the books on creativity talk about how creative thinking sort of relishes in ambiguity, where linear thinking relishes in resolution, like having an answer is the goal for sort of logical mathematical thinking. And it wants to, logical mathematical thinking likes to be done, likes to finish a thing. And creative thinking just likes to sort of be in it, be in the process. But that being said, this was too much ambiguity for me.
Me too. It was a lot. Still is a lot, for sure.
Yeah, that reminds me of something. One of you two said it at the last Hearts and Hands, and I can't remember which one, but that a good piece of art should ask a question. And like Jason, you were just saying, like linear thinkers, they just want the answer, whereas creative thinkers, they want the questions.
Mm. Yeah, the questions offer infinity. They offer, a thousand answers.
Yeah, I think we're called to do that as creatives. We're that working in that ambiguity and continually presenting that ambiguity for people. I think when we get to, much like you're saying, Jason, the extremes assume that everything is very clear, and often things aren't very clear. There's nuance.
You know, that clarity is safe. It feels good to know an answer and for that to be resolved. And, we can easily veer into some dangerous territory here if we're talking about theology and biblical interpretation. So I just want to be clear. I believe there's 1,000 right answers to any creative problem. But I don't think that's true for core doctrine, for scriptural interpretation. I do believe in absolutes in that field.
Mm-hmm.
That is an important distinction.
for sure. I was going to say that is the responsibility then of, you know, artists who are Christian to find that space where, you know, we know the capital T truth and, you know, we still present questions and thoughts within our human experience, because we don't know everything. You know, God is really big. God is really big. And so I think he's given us a lot to think on and to discover. And one of the coolest things I heard in the past several years was and maybe you guys know this, having been trained in the languages, but the word meditate in the Bible, it's like to chew on, right? Like the word is it's like a cow, you know, like what a cow does. It's the same thing. Like you chew on it for a really long time because there's so much to get out of it. And like, that's what God asks us to do, is to take this truth that he's given us and to meditate on it. And how cool that he's also given us his spirit to broaden our understanding. I can't remember which psalm that is. Where probably David asked that, you know, broaden my understanding of what you're trying to tell me here. I love that as a creative person, that God's so big, there's always more to understand. If you're saturated in word, you know, there's always more.
And when you look at creation too, when you look at the world and you see evidence, you see God's fingerprints, I just think there's more and more there. I just learned that people can tell honeybees where to pollinate. They put up signs. This blows my mind. Like at the end of their row, they'll put up a big black and white sign with a triangle, and then their hive has the same triangle. And the bees like follow the signs. What? What else is there? What else did God work into this amazing world? And so there's an example where there's more. There's more to learn. There's just so much more. Mm-hmm.
That is not the end of this conversation. We've got plenty more for you next week as we continue our conversation with Jason and Anna. But as always, if you've got questions you'd like answers to, people you'd like to hear from, or you're an artist and you want to come and talk to us about what you've been working on, feel free to reach out to us at heartsandhandspodcast@gmail.com or on any social media platform @WellsCreatives.
We look forward to hearing from you, and we'll be back again next week. Catch you then.